going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
The recent allegations against entertainer R. Kelly and the recent Lifetime documentary series are deeply, deeply disturbing.
That's Cook County, Illinois, State's Attorney Kim Fox announcing an investigation into R&B singer R. Kelly. This just happening a few hours ago. The Fulton County District Attorney's Office near Atlanta, Georgia, also announcing an investigation into allegations made during Lifetime's six-episode docuseries Surviving R. Kelly. Several women spoke out, claiming they were sexually assaulted and held as sex slaves by the singer inside his Atlanta mansion and Chicago recording studio.
He told me to perform sexual acts while his friends were in the back seat and, like, humiliated me in front of everyone. It was like he owned me.
Tonight, we take a look at the issues raised in the docuseries. My guests are Lisa Crooms, Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Professor at Howard University School of Law, Indira Hennard, Executive Director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center and Clinical Psychologist, Dr. Jeff Menzie. Thank you all for coming in. I really appreciate you coming in to talk about this. Let me start with you, Lisa. Your reaction to these legal moves announced late today?
Good evening.
Yeah, hey.
I think that it's encouraging, but it makes me wonder why one needed to have 6 hours of documentary to provide evidence of things that existed long before we hit the weekend.
What do you mean by that?
The allegations have been well known for quite some time. The documentary done brilliantly by Dream Hampton just pulled it all together, but it's not as if it contained new allegations. So to see the moves by both Cook County and Fulton County, I'm encouraged, but I'm also concerned because it makes me ask the question, if there had been no documentary, would we be having this conversation right now? That is, would Cook County or Fulton County have decided to launch an investigation which is long overdue?
Mm-hmm. Same question. Indira, your thoughts about these recent developments in light of all of these decades-long allegations?
Yeah, I mean, good evening. You know, I think to what my fellow panelists just said is that, you know, this is, you know, long overdue, right? I think what this weekend did was, yes, we've known about these allegations and we've known about the abuse for decades. For advocates, for folks who have been doing this work, we've been talking about this for a really long time. What this weekend did was really, it was the first time in which a mainstream media outlet really uplifted and centered the voices of Black women and girls who are survivors of sexual violence.
But we are now just getting the deep, dark details of these allegations. These things have happened over the course of many years, these allegations that have come out, Dr. Menzie. So do you believe, does it appear to you that now that we are getting so many details in very, very graphic form, that is the thing that has really caught the attention?
I think that those of us that are in the masses of people, you know, the everyday citizen right now, we're the ones getting the details. But when these accusations came forth, there were plenty of details that accompanied the accusations. So the legal system of Fulton County, they're not just now getting the details of the situation. I think what's happening is that in light of the Me Too movement and all of the brouhaha about sexual assault and sexual misconduct right now, I think that there's a wave. And I think Fulton County and the other county in Illinois, they jumped on. They said, OK, let's do this. And, you know, and I can't help to also say that some people may be looking for their 15 minutes as well to say, hey, I'm the one that's going to press these charges to get, you know, get my time to shine. You know, because some people are very superficial in this process as well. And they may even be looking to run for a greater office a little bit later. So this is an excellent political move to be making right now.
But I would also argue that this has been happening piecemeal. And as was earlier suggested, this was a mainstream event, the trial. The you know, the first trial was in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It was not here, and people were getting piecemeal pieces of information, and then we didn't hear a whole lot about this until maybe 2 years ago when there were the allegations of the kidnappings or these girls being brainwashed, held against their will. So sometimes Lisa, does the legal system need to have that push when if these things are just out there but no one appears to be doing anything about it?
I would say that what we're looking at right now indicates that that is the case. When the victims are black and brown, girls and women, credibility tends to be viewed as an issue, and any claims of assault tend to be dismissed and made to be allegations rather than something that someone has actually experienced. Mm-hmm. And I think that the fact that black and brown girls and women have throughout history been treated as disposable within the confines of not just the larger U.S. society, but within the context of our own communities, our own families. We're expected to remain silent and suffer in silence. And if we speak, then it is twisted as we are bringing yet another black man down. I think that at this point, what I find to be encouraging is it appears that there are more people who are willing to dismiss that calculus as being false, that calling R. Kelly to account for what he has done is not about this trade-off between black women and black men. This is about people. This is about human beings, one person preying upon other people and creating the space in which those people can, in fact, speak their truth and aren't, in fact, penalized or demonized for doing so.
Can allegations be made to stick? Because there have been very recent cases of celebrities where, you know, Bill Cosby's in jail because there were all of these women that came forward, but we just had one case that sent him to jail. Now we have all of these women that are coming forward and making these allegations. Can the same thing happen legally?
Oh, I believe so. I mean, I think it depends on what what ends up being the primary charge. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a trafficking charge, if he's transporting people or facilitating the transportation of people across state lines, whether you've got false imprisonment and kidnapping. I think that what happened to Bill Cosby is an indication that R. Kelly is not untouchable at this point, even though he has passed through for the past 20 some odd years being untouched, actually being, it appears to be, being Teflon.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the docuseries on Lifetime, Surviving R. Kelly. Two prosecutors, one in Georgia, one in Illinois, now opening criminal investigations into allegations of sex abuse and a whole laundry list of other things concerning R. Kelly. Indira, I want you to listen to this, and I want you to react on the other side for me, please.
And I went to the National Domestic Violence Awareness Hotline, and there are 17 questions. There was only two things on that list that Robert hadn't done to me. And that's when it became real to me, like, you're being abused.
that from R. Kelly's second wife, who finally was able to escape the situations of abuse based on what she is, what she's saying. Busy week for you after this series began to air. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, we've seen a significant spike in hotline calls this past weekend throughout the entire duration of the documentary series. You know, we always tend to see spiking calls when there's a high profile case or something around sexual violence that is taking national attention. I think what's important to note, and, you know, what we've been uplifting this entire weekend and at the start of this week, is that what happened and what we saw this weekend was gut-wrenching. And what's important is that we also saw the veil being lifted on rape in the African American community. What we also saw is, you know, conversations around what does community accountability look like? Right? What does the healing of Black women and Black girls look like? Historically, in the African American community, rape has always been a taboo. And the fact that these women and, you know, young girls were able to stand in their truth and speak their power, yes, it was hard to watch. And so now the hope is that we can begin to have these conversations and we can begin to really look at how are we supporting, you know, Black women and girls who are victims of sexual abuse. I think what's also important is that there were so many elements in what we saw this weekend through the documentary series around grooming, which is a key element of childhood sexual abuse. It's important to note that R. Kelly groomed through his music. It's also important to note that he was able to perpetuate and do what he did as a result of the network of people around him, his lawyers, his managers, his handlers. All of those people helped to perpetuate rape culture. Right. And this is where the community accountability comes in. And then, you know, we've also heard those comments around people are still struggling with, you know, how could he do this or did he really do this? Trying to separate the R. Kelly musician from what he has done. We saw it with Bill Cosby. We've seen it with other high profile folks as well. But again, he is a predator. He is a pedophile. There is no question about that. And I also want to be clear that just because he had issues in his childhood does not give him an excuse or a reason to perpetuate against other people. Right. And so, again, that's where the accountability comes in. And we have to be real clear. You don't get a pass because you had some issues in your childhood.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the issues surrounding the docuseries Surviving R. Kelly. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Patrice calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. Patrice, what's on your mind?
Hi. I have a question. Hello, everyone.
Peace.
Hi.
I was wondering how it would work if they had out-of-court settlements, the parents had out-of-court settlements, and they tried to prosecute him for these charges.
Can we get a real quick law school 101? Because I would imagine we're talking about civil versus criminal?
Yes, that's one division, that is civil versus criminal, but you also have, because there are so many victims, he hasn't settled with everyone. So even if he has enforceable settlement agreements with a non-disclosure component that he has signed with respect to previous charges and allegations, it doesn't stand that every single young girl or woman who was in fact sexually assaulted by him has in fact signed a settlement agreement. So they might be bound by the agreements that are already in place, but there are enough victims where so that any prosecution could in fact go forward without calling into question any settlement as it relates to, let's say, a civil settlement.
So thank you so much, Patrice. And let's be clear, these are still allegations in the docuseries, and that Kelly's camp over the past several days has been very clear that he plans on addressing not this as a whole, but even some of the individual allegations made by each of these women. And Dr. Menzi, I wanted to go to you and ask, how does this work? And Dira kind of touched on it, this grooming, but they call him the Pied Piper. He calls himself the Pied Piper.
In a chocolate factory.
Yeah, and calling all of these young girls to him. How does that work? How are we missing this?
Well, see, first, my background's in clinical psychology. I don't dismiss the trauma that he experienced as a child. I don't excuse his behavior by that, but I don't dismiss it either because I know better. I know that his brother, Kelly, he said that they were actually sexually abused by their older sister. And so we're talking about he was abused as a child, so allegedly, by his older sister. And so what I also know is that, you know, we speak about how brown and black girls and women are dismissed. But a lot of times brown and black boys and men are also dismissed. I mean, you hardly hear those stories. And when you do, I mean, I've heard stories where guys who are being sexually abused or physically abused by their spouse, you know, female mate, are actually ridiculed when the cops show up, or laughed at, or joked, or you know, talked really bad about. So I can't get with the dismissal of a male and a boy's actually experiencing the assault as well.
But there has to be somebody who says something about at some point when the signs start popping up.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. And I can't dismiss that, the fact that boys are victimized as well. And we definitely can't dismiss R. Kelly's early life experiences because that is we say hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. And so we know that most sexual abusers, statistically speaking, have also themselves been sexually abused one time in their life. They seek to normalize their experiences by making sure that other people have those same experiences.
Stay with us. I want to continue this conversation and your point, Dr. Menzi, but also the broader issue. There are so many questions to this very complex issue. How did this happen? We're talking about it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Winona from D.C. Anthony from D.C. Don't hang up. Stay on the line. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141. The original Quiet Storm is next on 96.3 WHUR. But this conversation continues on Sirius XM. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
He actually had me go on the bus, his tour bus. He wanted me to take off the little dressy clothes I had on. It went into him suggesting sexual acts, like oral and sex. I felt like I shouldn't have done that so fast, but at the same time, I didn't want to tell him no. I guess because I was young, pretty much, and I just didn't want to tell him no.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are examining some of the many issues raised by the Lifetime docuseries Surviving R. Kelly. Two criminal investigations announced today in Illinois and Georgia. My guests are Lisa Crooms, Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Professor at the Howard University School of Law, Indira Hennard, Executive Director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center, and Clinical Psychologist Dr. Jeff Menzi. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, I wanted to ask Dr. Menzi about this. You know, I'm a father of a 20-year-old young woman. In my eyes, she'll always be my girl. You're a father.
Yes.
Was this hard for you to watch?
It wasn't hard for me to watch.
It was. I was terrified. Yeah. I didn't sleep after watching the first three episodes Sunday night.
Wow.
And so I mean, for me,
yeah,
I lost sleep after watching this first three episodes, like I lost sleep watching,
wow,
like I lost sleep watching, yeah, Alien, like, yeah, I lost sleep watching The Legend of Hell House.
Definitely,
this was a horror show for,
absolutely,
me.
Absolutely, yeah, and it was a horror show. I do agree with that point. It wasn't difficult for me because I've worked on the front lines.
Okay,
you know, and I've heard lots and lots of stories. You know, I've helped a lot of people to overcome the trauma associated with sexual abuse, and so it wasn't a horror story for me. I was actually looking at it more from a forensics perspective. I had my forensic psychologist's eye on it, paying attention to the stories, the details, the mannerisms. I'm looking at it also from a lifetime production perspective, just to see what is the narrative that they're sowing, because it wasn't necessarily about, from my perspective, about assisting the victims as much as it was putting on a lifetime production. Again, I knew about the accusations. I've been following the case for years. I stopped listening to R. Kelly long time ago because of these accusations that I, you know, if you heard me when I was on other shows, it's like, yeah, I believe that this cat has some serious issues and that he's actually doing these things to people. And it's just, I mean, he's traumatized, not an excuse. You know, just an explanation of what leads to, because you say, how did he get to this point? And as our sister said, it's his network around him that helped to buffer him. Every now and then they say, hey, man, you got a problem. You can't be doing this. They said it in the documentary. Yet and still, he had enough power to continue in his predatory ways. And again, I don't want us to miss the point that he allegedly was abused by his sister. You know, and so when we're talking about rape and sexual abuse in the black community, we've got to talk about it from both sides, man, so if we're really going to heal and address this issue thoroughly.
But Indira, every person who is abused does not grow up to be an abuser.
Correct.
Not everyone.
Correct. 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 And so I think that it's also important. I definitely hear what my brother, you know, next to me is saying. And, you know, we normally see when there is a young child and they have been perpetrated against, and then they may perpetrate against another child. So, for example, if there's a 14-year-old and they've been sexually abused and then they ended up perpetrating against a 15 or a 16-year-old, we definitely see that. And what he said is absolutely correct. We do not want to dismiss the trauma that one has experienced, and we definitely don't want to dismiss the experiences of, you know, boys. But let's be clear, there are a lot of survivors of sexual violence who don't perpetrate. And again, to my point, is that it does not give you a pass, right? And so we can hold that he has been traumatized and he has been sexually abused, but there still has to be accountability around the women that he raped, that he sexually abused. And so we have to be clear on that. It was methodical. It was calculated. It was grooming. Right. And that, and he was able to do that through the network around him. Mm. Right. And so, you know, let's be really, really clear that even, you know, we saw, as, you know, my panelist said, the kind of lifetime production. But there is something said when a survivor of sexual violence can feel safe enough to tell their story, because what, when that happens, when folks can bear witness to that, it gives other survivors the courage to tell their story. And that is really, really important to note.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Cynthia calling from D.C. Cynthia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
You guys kind of touched on it. I wanted to circle back around this concept of the cycle of abuse and how R. Kelly... I thought I also heard that he was abused by a male, but, you know, that whole dynamic. But I also wanted to touch on this dynamic of how we as women in our development are trying to, you know, be involved with people, how you can get pulled into it and not be fully aware of those warning signs. Or, you know, you're young and you think, okay, you know, like, I would like to delve into that a little more, because one thing that blew me about the documentary was that older woman who said that she tapped on the floor for hours for him to come get her. And that was like the final straw for her, that when he didn't come, it sounded like she just said she packed up her bags and left of her own free will. So I would like to talk about that. And the reason I'm saying this is because my young niece, she shared with me, you know, a time when she had a power dynamic going on, and she was kind of holding that in. And when I told her, hey, this is all a part of life and understanding relationships. Yes, it happened to you once, and, you know, how you handled it. It was liberating to her. So that mind thing that we as women, we're susceptible to it because we want love.
Let me stop you there, Cynthia, because I want Indira to talk about that briefly. Indira, because that is really at the heart of why victims of domestic violence, domestic abuse, find it so difficult to leave husbands and partners. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what Cynthia is trying to get at.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very personal decision to decide to leave, right? What the data tells us is that sometimes it takes 8 or 9 times for a victim of domestic violence or any other type of abuse to leave their partner, right? But I think we have to begin to have this conversation around what are healthy relationships, right? What does a healthy relationship look like? But even one step before that is being able to put language and vocabulary around the experiences that we are having, right? Being able to name and define our experiences are so important, because when you can begin to name and define it, there's power in that. And so I think, you know, again, what we saw this weekend, it really began in an intentional way to lift the veil of silence, to really begin to have conversations and for folks to come forward and speak their truth. Because when you can speak it, right, you know, on some levels, you're also able to name it. And I think, you know, being able to look at those warning signs, sometimes it's hard when you're in the midst of it.
Especially right? For young girls.
Right, of course, of course. Sometimes it's hard in the midst of it. But again, you know, being able to have conversations with young girls and young boys just around healthy relationships and around consent, you know, that starts when you're wee high, right? And I think, again, that's part of the community conversation that we need to have, you know, after this documentary series and ongoing, just around building words, building vocabulary, talking about healthy relationships, you know, doing trainings around, you know, warning signs of sexual abuse, all of that.
Well, and I think one of the things that was really telling during the docuseries, and this was, I believe, in the 5th or even the 6th episode, where the sister of one of the girls who was allegedly being held as a sex slave, it started off as R. Kelly grooming her to be a vocalist, a musician, a star, the whole bit. And then when the sister went down to see her, and the sister said, you have to ask to go to leave. You've got to ask to go and get something to eat. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, you know, a teenager versus, as her sister said, I don't have to ask anybody to do anything. I'm a grown ass woman. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of influence, or the difference, I should say, is very telling between those that may have self-esteem issues, have not grown, have not experienced, haven't started those things, as opposed to a grown a woman who said, are you out of your mind? You know, something to think about. Cynthia, thank you so much. Anthony, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I pretty much had two topics I wanted to touch on. First off, good evening. I grew up pretty much in this era of the 90s, which I would consider a tight-knit era. And what I mean by that is basically it was still the era where people still had to be in the house at a certain time frame, being in the house by the street lights coming on and stuff, you know, stuff like that. So I have two red flags that pretty much went off, and one was with Sparkle's niece being 14, also with, you know, R. Kelly, you know, flying the 17-year-old from that he had met and didn't send a red flag off to her as well. In that documentary, he included that he lied about, she included that he lied about her age, stating that the young lady was 16 because R. Kelly had mentioned that to her, so she felt more comfortable since they were more close in age. But actually, you know, after she had discovered that she was 14 around that time, she got sick to her stomach and stuff like that. With this tight-knit era and everything that was going on, it wasn't a red flag that went off in anybody's mind at any shape, form, or fashion during this time frame? Like,
let's see what our panelists have to say, because he raises a point that's been asked throughout this series. What happened to the parents? Is everyone starstruck so much to the point that they were ignoring red flags?
Yeah.
Dr. Menzies.
And so this part of the conversation is kind of difficult, because when you try to assess the entirety of the situation, meaning what is the parents' responsibility? What is their, were they aware? Were they not aware? When you try to talk about maybe even potentially the potential victim's responsibility, when you want to talk about R. Kelly, you know, in a way other than him being a predator, you know, people try to say that you're a rape apologist. But what the brother's bringing up is a very important point. Where was that village? Where was that neighborhood? Where was the family? Where was the awareness? Where was that one person that said something ain't right? And the Sparkle said it herself. She thought it was something not right about him, you know, having some younger friends. You know, she introduced her niece to him. She had been with him since almost day one. And she says she didn't know that he was that way. And so those are the questions that must be asked. And everybody must be brought up to a certain level of accountability. You know, a lot of people point out how the guys who's managing him, they turned a blind eye to it. You know, one went and got the girls for him, or the one who might have been, you know, picked them up from the airport, picked the girls up from the airport. But people are giving passes to such like Sparkle, who literally brought her 14-year-old niece to R. Kelly. And she ends up being the one in the video.
Well, Lisa, and this is another important point when it comes to possible criminal prosecution. It's one thing to say, to accuse R. Kelly of these things. But what about the people around him who knew? What did they say during Watergate? What did they know, and when did they know it? Is conspiracy a possibility as prosecutors begin to dig into this and begin to cast a broader net to ask questions?
Conspiracy might be an option. Aiding and abetting, most assuredly.
Yep.
Would be options, but that requires the underlying charge or claim to be solid enough so that then you can point to what they aided and abetted.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that, if you can, please.
You can't hold, let's say, his manager, the people who would go to the mall, mm-hmm. for example, and do the advance work. You can't hold them criminally, and you may not be able to hold them civilly liable without the underlying charge. So you can't aid and abet somebody unless they are committing a crime.
Okay.
Right. So you would have to have a solid criminal case, the underlying criminal case against R. Kelly, and then that's what you are able to potentially hold his circle to account for, but it's not them necessarily directly, since based on what was aired, there, I don't think, are any direct allegations against any of his people
right.
in terms of the sexual assaults or the violence.
Right.
That kind of violence. They just created the environment that allowed it to happen. So the creating the environment that allowed what might in fact be a criminal act to occur, you can only charge those folks with aiding and abetting if in fact you can convict with respect to the underlying crime.
Which is still a crime.
It would be a crime.
Yes. There we go. I need to take a break. Anthony, thank you for your phone call. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about surviving R. Kelly, the anger and the issues raised by this Lifetime docuseries. We'll be back in just a moment. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back.
I think that Robert wasn't convicted because my niece and sister and brother-in-law didn't come forward. Regarding criminal cases, if there is no willing participant, then really there's no case. I really don't know if my family was paid off. I know the family was still hanging out with him.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are continuing our discussion about the Lifetime docuseries Surviving R. Kelly. Late today, two criminal investigations announced in Illinois and Georgia following the airing of this docuseries. Indira, it's so hard to ask this question, but is this a good thing for the domestic violence and rape surviving community?
Well, I think that it's a good thing in that people are feeling comfortable in telling their stories and seeking support, right? Those of us who are on the ground in the trenches, who are working at agencies, who are on the front lines, the amount of calls and requests for services that we have seen, it is unprecedented. And again, this is a watershed moment for sexual violence. And like I mentioned earlier, anytime where survivors of sexual violence, where they hear, where they can bear witness to someone else's story, particularly the amount of national attention that this has gotten and other previous high-profile stories, it gives them the courage to come forward and seek support. And that is what we are seeing on the ground. We are seeing people utilizing the hotlines. We are seeing people coming in for individual counseling, for group counseling. And that is always a good thing because there is hope and healing is possible. And at the end of the day, that is what we want for all survivors.
Can you share the hotline with us now? And I will make sure that I post this on the WHUR.com Daily Drum page for those that are listening that need this information.
Yep. We run a 24-hour hotline, and the number is 202-333-RAPE.
202-333-RAPE. And for those who are outside of the D.C. metro who may need support, is there a national number or national resource that you can share with us?
Yes, they can call the National Sexual Hotline, and that is operated through RAIN.
RAIN?
Yes, RAIN, R-A-I-N-N.
Mm-hmm. And what's it called again, please?
It's the National Sexual Assault Hotline, and that phone number is 1-800-656-4673, and they're also available 24 hours.
656-4673. Thank you for that. Let me go back to the phone lines. Ramon calling from D.C. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind? Ramon, are you there? Give me a call back. The next thing, and this is the last piece of sound that I'm going to share, but I think this is so critical, and when you look at the evolution of these allegations from the allegations of sex with teen girls to now imprisonment, allegations of brainwashing, allegations of Stockholm syndrome, all of that. And this is one of the sets of parents who are obviously very, very concerned about what has happened when their daughter disappeared.
He told us that she was with R. Kelly. We was like, what are you doing? You're in college. We had this discussion. Weeks went by. No answers. It was like a dead silence tone when I called. It's been over almost 2 years now. And we still haven't seen our daughter.
Dr. Menzi, what is Stockholm Syndrome? What is brainwashing?
Yeah, so Stockholm Syndrome, it's a notion that people begin to identify and empathize with their capturers. People who are imprisoned or held against their will. And it's considered to be a sort of survival technique. It's when you try to put yourself in a frame of mind where you're no longer a victim, but you actually now are with somebody who actually that you care for and that cares for you. And, it's considered to be delusional, you know, because, of course, somebody who is oppressing you, keep you against your will, can't have your best interests at heart. But for some reason or another, psychologically, you begin to empathize and sympathize and relate with your captor, all the way to the point where you may even actually begin to defend the person that's holding you hostage. Now, the brainwashing piece, brainwashing is a term that came out of there were these CIA experiments that took place back in the day where they would literally try to wash the brain of all of its personality, its memory, and all those different types of things, and implant new things into the brain. Now, when we use brainwashing in this situation, we're not talking about that depth of it, but we're talking about a psychological manipulation of a person's desires, their wills, their behaviors, their thoughts, their feelings. And so what they're saying, when they say R. Kelly is brainwashing these young ladies, what they're saying is that he is somehow or another controlling their minds and therefore controlling their bodies through some level of manipulation, be it physical, be it sexual, be it emotional, be it psychological, whatever the case may be. He's controlling their thoughts, their beliefs, their desires, and ultimately their behaviors.
But how does he do that? How is he allegedly able to zero in on vulnerable ones, no matter what their ages are,
right,
and avoid those that would not be susceptible to that kind of influence,
right? And so there are a lot of women that are attracted to R. Kelly, first of all, those who are vulnerable to being manipulated and those who are not. And so I would believe that in those early stages he tests people. You know, because this is predatory behavior. As our sister said, Dara said earlier, this is very calculated. So he's going to throw tests out there at the beginning to see how willing is this person to go along with what I say? How bad do they want to be with me as R. Kelly? And then some that pass that test and go to the next level with them. Others, they turn away. Hey, good to meet you. I got my picture, got my selfie. Hey, and they gone. Mm-hmm. The other one, they kind of linger around. Or he might, like in the mall situation, the one young lady, the Latina, you know, he sent this boy back for her. His bodyguard came back for her and said, hey, R. Kelly wants you to come to the studio. And she was an aspiring singer. And so that's the other thing. You know, when you are a celebrity, an actor or a musician, then you have people who are aspiring for that same level of artistry that you have. And so those types of people are going to linger around. They're going to hang because they think that there may be an opportunity for them to catch a break. And that's who he's usually preying upon. If you notice, there are background singers, background dancers, aspiring singers, you know, people of that nature. And so he knows that he can manipulate them greater by dangling the carrot of potential stardom later.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, how legally does law enforcement, our court system, address this going forward? Is this R. Kelly situation a watershed moment for the legal community when it comes to trafficking, abuse, and the like?
It could be. It could be. I think what we need to keep in mind is the same prosecutorial discretion that allowed law enforcement in both Cook County and Fulton County to field concerns raised about his conduct and choose not to investigate is the same prosecutorial discretion that those prosecutors' offices in Cook County and Fulton County are now using to at least investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Investigation does not mean charge. Investigation does not mean arrest.
Indictment.
It doesn't mean indictment. It doesn't mean grand jury. None of that. But it's at least, I would say, on Tuesday, we are probably in a much different place than we were last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And I take hope from that.
Yeah.
That this is positive in terms of moving forward, giving people the space to those who are strong enough to tell their stories and to tell their truth, to give them that space to be able to, as you said, stand in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's step by step by step, because he is a manifestation of a much larger problem.
Mm-hmm.
So even if there are indictments, mm-hmm, even if there are convictions as it relates to this individual, even his inner circle, mm-hmm, the larger problem remains. Patriarchy, violence, misogyny, the devaluation of people of color within a context that is based in white supremacy. I thought about the Stockholm Syndrome,
yeah,
because in some ways, people who've been oppressed by white supremacy, who find themselves invested in the same system that has led to their oppression, the oppression of their forebears, in many respects, that strikes me as a kind of Stockholm syndrome.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is.
So in other words, what may have historically happened outside the black community can happen within the black community where you may seek refuge. And so no one is immune to these kinds of criminal transgressions.
And one thing that I would like, I'd like to put on the table is perhaps one of the positive developments from this will be we will change our language about talking about the real and imagined sexuality of young black girls.
Mm-hmm.
That if we could get rid of the term fast from
that?
Our own vocabulary in terms of how we talk about our own children, all of this would have been positive.
Projecting what we are seeing in our heads on young girls instead of who they really are as just growing up.
And give 12-year-olds the chance to be 12. Yeah. Don't make them into adults by hypersexualizing
them. Which means blocking some of those pop culture influences.
Yeah,
you've got to do that.
Lisa Crooms, Indira Hinard, and Dr. Jeff Menzies, thank you so much for
coming in and talking to us.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lisa.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.